Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict looks ahead to World Youth Day in Sydney, Australia, almost 1 year away. New hopes for Catholics in China following the publication of the Pope's letter to the church there. And on the front lines of the fight against human trafficking, how the church is working on prevention and rehabilitation for victims in Nepal. Welcome to the programme. Speaking to thousands of enthusiastic young people amongst the pilgrims gathered in the Vatican on Wednesday, Pope Benedict looked ahead to World Youth Day, which will be celebrated in Sydney, Australia, next summer. Speaking of Australia as a land of wondrous beauty, with an ancient Aboriginal history and a multitude of vibrant cities and communities, the Pope encouraged all young people to prepare spiritually for this marvellous celebration of the faith. My colleague Charles Collins has all the details.
Pope Benedict had special words for the organizers of the Sydney 2008 World Youth Day during his weekly general audience on Wednesday.
Dear young people, 1 year from now we will meet at World Youth Day in Sydney. I want to encourage you to prepare well for this marvelous celebration of the feast, which will be spent in the company of your bishops, priests, religious, youth leaders, and one another.
The Pope was speaking in the Paul VI Audience Hall during his last weekly general audience before going on vacation to the province of Belluno next Monday. He offered the organizers of next year's event his thanks for their hard work and preparation.
World Youth Day is much more than an event. It is a time of a deep spiritual renewal, the fruits of which benefits the whole of society.
The Pope was speaking after giving his catechesis on the early figures of the Christian Church. On Wednesday, he spoke about St. Basil.
Ordained bishop of Caesarea and Cappadocia in 370, Basil tirelessly cared for his people and devoted himself continuously to meditation on the Sacred Word. He attended to the material needs of his flock, supported the poor and marginalized, and defended the freedom to profess a Christian faith.
The Pope also made a special greeting to the participants of a week-long athletic competition beginning Wednesday in Rome.
I extend a cordial greeting to the English-speaking pilgrims present to this audience, especially to the athletes and organizers of the European Maccabi Games.
The event brings together Jewish athletes from around the continent. After the audience, the Pope spoke briefly to some of the participants who gave him the official sweatshirt from the Games. I'm Charles Collins.
And my thanks to Charles for that report on Pope Benedict's weekly general audience. A masterpiece of truth and love. That's how Pope Benedict XVI's letter to Chinese Catholics has been described by a top Chinese prelate, who hopes the document may form the basis for a constructive dialogue between Beijing and the Holy See. Cardinal Joseph Zen heads the Catholic community in Hong Kong, and he echoes the voice of other bishops in mainland China, hoping the papal letter may pave the way for a normalization of relations with the government. China and the Holy See broke off diplomatic relations over half a century ago after the Communist Party took power, and since then Catholics, like followers of other faiths, have suffered frequent periods of persecution. Throughout the letter, Pope Benedict expresses his concern and appreciation for the suffering of Chinese Catholics under communist rule. He says although the church there enjoys greater religious freedom today than in the past, grave limitations remain that touch the heart of the faith and that to a certain degree suffocate pastoral activity. The The 55-page letter, accompanied by a statement from the Vatican Press Office, was released on June 30th and made available on the Vatican website in several languages, including Chinese. As a gesture of goodwill, it was also sent to government authorities in Beijing more than a week prior to its publication. The two-part document looks first at the theological aspects of the Church in China, stressing unity of the faith, despite deep divisions between bishops that are officially registered with the government-sanctioned Catholic Patriotic Association and those faithful to the underground church, which professes loyalty to the Pope. The second part, on practical pastoral guidelines, urges priests, religious and laypeople to continue being courageous witnesses to the truth, working for reconciliation amongst all Catholics in China.
I would say reconciliation of hearts, a union of spirit, and so there is already this process of reconciliation.
Cardinal Joseph Zen told me the letter is a masterpiece of theological reflection, bringing together Pope Benedict's passion for the truth with his profound pastoral concern for all those in his care.
I really admire a wonderful balance between the clarity of the principles and the kindness of the expressions. I think it's a masterpiece coming from a great theologian and from a loving father. And I really hope that the people take this letter in the right perspective. It is a highly spiritual and specifically religious atmosphere. And there's no political undertone. And so I really hope the leaders in China take the letter from that perspective, and I hope the clergy especially would be united behind Holy Father, really to achieve what the Holy Father hopes, which is to come back to the normality, so that the Catholic Church may be able to live the Catholic faith. Yeah, because what the Pope is saying is nothing personal. It's the traditional and the universal doctrine of the Church.
You say there are no political overtones to this, and yet the letter is quite critical of the lack of real religious freedom for Catholics in China. What kind of reactions have you seen so far from the Chinese government, from officials?
We don't see any harsh reaction. It seems that everything was quiet, and it surprised me a little. But maybe really because they could have the letter with some time in anticipation, so they could digest the letter and understand it in the way it should be understood. That is, as a affirmation of religious principles and also expression of goodwill for a constructive dialogue.
As you say, it's calling for a new phase of serious dialogue between the Holy See and the Chinese government to resolve some of the most difficult issues. Do you see this perhaps as helping to smooth the way for a resumption of dialogue?
I think surely such a letter coming from the Holy Father himself is a unprecedented, a historical move to address a letter to a people in particular, and very sincere and frank statement of the bottom line of what is really the demand of the Catholic faith, to which not even the Holy Father can renounce. And so to ask the leader to understand that this is nothing against anybody. It's just the Catholic faith as is it practiced in the whole world and since the time of the apostles.
As you say, the letter is calling for reconciliation between underground Catholic communities and those officially recognized by the Patriotic Association. What kind of reactions have you heard from members of those two different communities there on the mainland?
I don't have many opportunity to get impression from China because, you see, there is some particular difficulty for me to get into touch with the people in China. But I suppose the encouragement coming from the Holy Father is just to carry on a wonderful process already, you know, started in these recent years, because those people in the underground, they know that almost all the bishops, even in the open church, they are in communion with the Holy Father. And then the people in the official church, they know that the position of the underground church is the objectively right one. And so they respect each other, they understand each other. And so there is already this process of reconciliation. So it's I would say, reconciliation of hearts, a union of spirit, but not necessarily without any agreement between the Holy See and the Chinese government. There may not be the condition right to the two parts really to be united. That may still have to wait for some time, yeah.
The letter acknowledges the suffering endured by Chinese Catholics in the past, but it's also true to say that this suffering goes on, doesn't it, for many people there still in China?
Oh, yes, and in both parts of the church, in the underground and also in the official church, where the bishops and priests are continuously harassed by the government, yeah.
Do you think this letter is going to have any impact in that sense, in perhaps leading to a lessening of this type of persecution?
I hope so, really. I hope so, yeah. And actually, I think the government should appreciate the peaceful nature of our faithful. And they always were so patient under all kinds of persecution. And they never resort to violence to resist the persecution. So I think finally they should allow these good people to live their life of faith.
China, of course, is such a huge nation. How hard is it going to be to make this letter available, do you suppose, for people particularly in the more isolated rural areas?
Yeah, I think it may take some time before everybody can reach the text of the letter. I heard that the website was open for 1 or 2 days, but then they closed it, and so maybe it's more difficult for people to have a copy of the letter. But I think little by little, surely the letter will reach the hands of our faithful. Yeah.
The letter says it hopes there will be a great flowering of the church in China. What can you tell us about the growth of the Catholic community there today?
Unfortunately, we don't have very reliable figures. But surely there is a consoling phenomenon that especially the young people, the university students, they feel the need of something spiritual, some higher value, and they are interested in learning the doctrine of the faith. Yeah.
The letter also calls for a very high degree of attention to the formation of people who may not have received a good education in the faith up until now. Is this a very serious problem, do you think?
Oh, yes, sure. This is very important because the society is not by itself very favorable to our faith. There is so much secularization, especially in the big cities. So for a faith to be strong or even just to survive, it needs to be nourished and educated. Yeah.
What about the problem, though, of priests and even bishops, perhaps, who have been ordained without the proper education, without a proper understanding of their faith?
Yeah, in this abnormal situation, sometimes really people can be excused if they cannot have a really adequate formation before being ordained. But I suppose all the bishops should be very much concerned and to do whatever they can and to supply what was lacking. And so I see that in many dioceses, they are going much importance to spiritual retreat and even some longer course of ongoing formation. And sometimes we are asked also to help from Hong Kong. And we are very willing to do that. But surely today, sometimes it is difficult even to do this. But tomorrow, I think when the situation goes back to the normal, then we may be able to have much more exchange of such contact between Hong Kong and the church in China.
The Pope asks for prayers for all Catholics, all Christians in China today. What else do you think people from outside the country can do to help encourage this normalization of the church there?
Oh, I really believe that the most important thing is to pray. And the Holy Father asks everybody to pray, especially to Our Lady and help of Christians. And to celebrate the 24th of May as a day of prayer for the church in China. And I think this is the first thing everybody can do for China. But then also try to be well informed about things of the church in China, because a correct information may also guide our prayer. And I really hope that the whole family of the Catholic Church be concern about the situation of the church in China.
Cardinal Joseph Zen is head of the Catholic community in Hong Kong. Trafficking in human beings is the third most profitable crime worldwide after drugs and weapons smuggling. It's a growing phenomenon and is being facilitated by globalization and modern technologies. The United States government estimates that 600 to 800,000 men, women and children are trafficked across international borders each year. Approximately 80% of victims are women and girls, and up to half of them are minors. However, these numbers do not include millions of victims around the world who are trafficked within their own national borders. In Asia, thousands of Nepalese girls are trafficked each year into the red light districts in the cities of India. Others end up in countries in the Asian Pacific region, or even as far afield as the Gulf States. My colleague Susie Hodges has been finding out more about their plight and how the Catholic Church is trying to help.
Campaigners estimate there are around 200,000 Nepalese women and girls presently working in Indian brothels. Some of them are as young as 9 or 10. The girls are sold by poor village parents or sometimes even their own husbands. Others are tricked into fraudulent marriages or promised employment in the capital, Kathmandu, only to find themselves enslaved as prostitutes in India. Caritas Nepal is at the forefront of awareness campaigns to warn girls and their families about the traffickers and provide rehabilitation to girls who manage to escape or who are rescued from the brothels. Rai Rupa is head of the women's desk at Caritas Nepal, and she told me more about the extent of the trafficking problem in her country and the suffering of its victims.
It is estimated that about from 5,000 to 7,000 young girls and women are sold for flesh trade to India every year.
Is it a growing trade?
Now it is a growing trade and a new way, because at the beginning it used to be only to India. But now it has spread out in other Arabian countries, Gulf countries.
Presumably here, it must be much easier to try and prevent people getting trafficked in the first place, make them aware of the dangers. Mm-hmm. How is Caritas involved in this?
Yeah, because Caritas Nepal is focusing on preventive actions. That's why we organize awareness program for the community people. In the grassroots level, we also organize awareness program for the school students, especially for the youths. And we have radio program through Radio Nepal, we broadcast awareness orientation sessions, like we provide them what is the issue and what are the causes of this issue. And we also provide them case study of the survivors, those who have come back from the brothels. So in that way, we try to aware the people. We cannot reach everywhere. That's why in the all parts of our country, so that's why we use radio. We have radio program, and we have also developed different materials like posters, and we have information kit that we distribute in the schools when we organize our awareness sessions. And we also organize awareness sessions for health workers, because when the girls were rescued from the brothels of India, we had to take them to the hospital, and the doctors and nurses, when they came to know that they have come back from the brothels, they did not want to treat them, they didn't want to touch them. So that was very bitter experience for us. And those girls who have come back from the brothels, they asked Caritas Nepal to organize awareness program for them. Now we are organizing this regular awareness program for the health workers also. And we also tell about the causes, and we also tell the stories of the girls. And as resource person, we take the survivors. Those who have come back from the brothels, they become our resource persons.
The victims of the traffickers in Nepal often come from poor rural areas where the female population is largely illiterate and where girls are traditionally valued less than boys. Rupa says these attitudes, plus poverty and ignorance, help explain why so many girls from these areas fall victim to the traffickers.
Yeah, Nepal is a very poor country, as you know, and these girls are from the very poorest families. And some of the girls are the age of 14, and we have a study done in the brothels. So from the age of 9 years, the girls are sold.
And are they sold by their families? Are they tricked by friends of the families? Or are they kidnapped?
In a way, they are sold by families, but the families, they don't know whether they are taken to the brothels, because they are promised by the pimps that they will be taken to Kathmandu, the capital city of Nepal. So they don't know whether they are in Nepal or they are in India, because as Nepalese people, we don't need any visa to go to India, and we have open border.
So the parents are often being told these girls have been taken to be waitresses or clean a house.
Household work, and to work in the carpet factories. So that they can get money, mm-hmm. and they also get food and shelter.
The vast majority of girls in Nepal who fall into the clutches of the traffickers are sold to brothels to work as sex slaves. But Rupa says some of the girls do end up working as domestic servants in appalling conditions. And she points out that even young boys sometimes end up as victims of the traffickers.
Most of them are in the brothels, but some of them, they end up in the household work in different parts of the country.
And how are they treated there?
It's not guaranteed, because some of the people are treated well, but they have to work from morning till midnight. So how can we say that they are treated well? Not only girls, the boys are also sold for the circus. So they take the boys also.
And what age are these boys?
Oh, they are from the age of 7 to 15.
So, very young boys.
Very, very young boys. And we have seen the marks of their beatings, beaten by the masters, circus masters, in the rehabilitation centres.
The lucky girls either are rescued by police from the brothels or manage to escape. But their problems do not end there, as sometimes their families do not want them back at first, especially if they are HIV positive. And, as we heard earlier, they are often ostracised or scorned by the rest of society, like the doctors who did not want to touch the girls who had been rescued from the brothel. Rupa actually visited a number of brothels in India to talk directly to some of the Nepalese girls trapped there as prostitutes. Let's hear her account.
I had visited one of the brothels in Bombay, mm-hmm. so I met about 57 Nepali women.
And what were the conditions like there?
They were telling us it was very bad, yeah, because they had to tolerate about 25 men at a night. And one of the women was Tamang from the Dhading of Kathmandu. And she had a child. And she was taken there by her own husband. Can you imagine that? And along with the child, she was also forced to take her younger sister. So all the three people were sold by her own husband.
And did this woman get out from the brothel? Were you able to rescue her, or is she still there?
No, she's still there, because it takes to rescue, it takes a long process, and we have to communicate with the government.
In addition to their psychological trauma, the girls who escape or who do manage to be rescued often bear lasting physical damage from their experience as a sex slave. Rupa told me about one such girl rehabilitated by Caritas, who later found she was unable to bear children.
One girl is there who was also married. She also got this rehabilitation, all the services in the rehabilitation center. Now she also got married with a good person. He knows me. We know him. But what happened after getting married, she could not conceive the child because she was in the brothel for more than 5 years. So sometimes she becomes very helpless and very frustrated because she can't bear the child.
And this, the fact that she's unable to conceive is because of, you know, the fact that she was injured during the course of her work.
Her work. There was some gynecology problem. That is another sad story for us.
But let's end with the inspirational story of another rescued girl who underwent rehabilitation with Caritas Nepal. A story whose happy ending proves that despite undergoing such appalling abuse and suffering, these victims of the people traffickers can recover and lead normal lives.
One of the girls, she was studying in the school, but she was betrayed by her own uncle. He had taken her to Kathmandu by saying that she would have a better study in the school. According to her, on the way to Kathmandu, she was raped by her own uncle. Then that person, he sold her to in one of the brothels in India. But luckily, by the help of three girls in brothels, she could run away from the brothel and she was rehabilitated. And at the beginning, she did not want to talk to anybody. She hated the people like anything. And especially with the male persons, she did not want to talk to. And she did not trust anybody also. But later on, when we had counseling, literacy program, different skill programs, and now she is married. And she has a girl child. So they come to meet us in Caritas Nepal, and it gives us great satisfaction.
My thanks to Susie Hodges, talking there to Rai Rupa of Caritas Nepal. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.